Kurt Vonnegut, Reporter on the Afterlife, is a fiction podcast series presented by Fountainhead Transmedia and Scruffy Bots Entertainment. This immersive world is best enjoyed on headphones. Though, however you choose to journey into the fantasy world of postmortem journalism, we encourage you to do so with an open heart and mind. During my stroll through Howard Epstein's garden this morning, I passed Theodore Dr. Seuss Geisel bouncing atop the tallest of the truffula-like Joshua trees on a pogo stick. Yes, here I am again, straight out of the blue tunnel. I've arranged to meet two fashion-forward revolutionary women, Joan of Arc and Mary Quant. Living 600 years apart, they were both, in their own way, instrumental in defining how women are perceived today. Not just equals, but leaders on the battlefield and in the business world. Here comes Joan of Arc at the Cloister Stable. At age 13, a tomboy living in 15th century France, Joan was commanded by God to help put the Dauphin on the throne. Joan obeyed and led French troops to victory in the Hundred Years' War. Captured by the English, she was burned alive at the stake in 1431 at the tender age of 19.
Hands up! I smell your stink, Englishman. How about I slice off that little slug of a mustache?
Please retire your very impressive sword.
Kurt, watch out for this knave. She's a live one.
Well, hold on there, Kilgore. You and I have negotiated with publishing executives more petulant than this teenager.
You are muttering to yourself. Why?
I'm sorry, Joan. It's just Kilgore.
Kilgore, he is God?
Oh, no. He's just a voice that resides inside my head as long as I can remember. My doppelganger. Instinctively, he pops up when I'm apprehensive or charmed.
Don't say I didn't warn you. The grenades are still dangerous.
Joan, I'm Kurt Vonnegut, reporter on the Afterlife.
Fine. You want to learn to kick English butt, huh?
I'm not in that kind of shape, but I do want to learn how you kicked English butt. Why don't we take a walk through the stables? These days, most teenagers dream to take the country by storm via the internet, but you took France by hurricane force winds by defeating a whole country. What made you put away childish things and pick up a sword and helmet?
It was God, obviously. I was 13 when I first heard his voice in my head, telling me to lead an army. I thought, this is either divine intervention or the mushrooms I'd picked made me higher than a cuckoo's ballsack.
What is it like to be God's messenger?
God and I frolicked across the fields of France. We loved to wrestle. One day I was trying so hard to find his tickle spots. I was giggling, and he was roaring, and then suddenly he said, "Stop! Mary, stop!" He called me Mary. That's his ex-girlfriend. He never even married her. I said, "I am Joan of Arc," and I kicked him full force in his hanging fruits and ran back to my real father.
His hanging fruits? Ouch.
Can you imagine the pain?
Yes, it's a tender region of densely packed nerve endings.
Not his pain, my pain.
Oh.
With your smartphones nowadays, you can block a stalker. I had God right in my ear hole. Holy Wi-Fi has no service interruptions. Eventually, he wore me down. He needed me to save France. And he said I was his only hope. A 13-year-old girl. Why not?
Interesting choice indeed. So when you need God in the forbidden fruits, how in the Garden of Eden did he react?
He said in the voice of a choir girl, "Jean, my balls, they've turned inside out! One day I'll bestow you with the honor of sainthood, okay?
What? More evidence that history books only record stories from very particular perspectives.
Yes, from that of the heterosexual white male.
Let's dive into some more heresy. Rumor has it that your voices were not from God, but that you suffered from schizophrenia or a hallucinatory type of epilepsy. Does Joan of Arc believe it was truly God?
I know God's voice, and I know the voices of Saint Michael and Saint Catherine and Saint Marguerite, because they won't shut up.
You cut your hair short and dressed as a boy to evade the English and continued to dress this way throughout your trial, your history's immortal drag queen or drag knight. Were you experiencing what we know as gender dysphoria?
There's always been a spectrum, a scale of masculinity and femininity, and by the looks of your mustache, writer Kirk Vonnegut, we are both sliding along it.
I'm glad you enjoy my mustache, Joan of Arc. Do you identify more as a boy or a girl?
What does it matter to you if I identify as a male or female or an oily donkey's asshole? I was more boy than any of my three brothers. Next, you want to know how it was to be burned on a steak, huh? I got crispy, okay? Crispy like the last French fry on the plate.
You know, you made some powerful fashion statements. You wore armor, which was unheard of for women at that time.
You think I want to go to battle in a coconut bikini and a rah-rah skirt? I'm 5'2", so my armor was made specially by order of the Dauphin. Hoorah!
Hoorah! Well said. Hoorah for the Hoosiers. Well, you have quite the commanding presence, but did your age and gender create obstacles for you?
At first, the Dauphin refused to see me, but the news of me and my mission spread like teenager on fire. When I finally kneeled before him, I said, "God sent me to help you claim the throne." Then, he gave me an army to take to Orléans.
Well, thanks to your help, the Dauphin became King Charles VII. With no battle experience, you rode ahead of the French army, achieving sweeping victories. Did you ever doubt yourself or your mission?
Never! I had clear instructions from the voices in my head. What on earth could go wrong, huh?
Extraordinary. Yeah, I doubt every line I write. I change my character names 10 times. I freeze when faced with the milk options at the supermarket. And yet you never doubted yourself at such extreme moments of life and death.
Never.
Never?
Never! Well, maybe a little, when they didn't put the fire out.
Word on the battlefield was that you chased away prostitutes and mistresses with your sword. Was that early women's liberation?
No. God ordained sex. On his battlefield, you wave your sharpest sword, not your jiggly genitals.
So at the time, France was a country divided. The economy was suffering and the people were losing faith.
Someone had to step in and make some moves. Someone with courage and charisma, with a plan and a vision. I was a ray of hope in a dark time, comprend?
There were rumors that the Dauphin grew jealous of your popularity and your influence, that he may have been plotting to betray you.
No, I will not hear of this blasphemy. These are rumors spread by the shitty little English turds.
Oh, well, how do you really feel about the English army, Joan?
They were trying to take over our country. They saw me, and they peed their little metal underpants.
Oops.
I heard that you were quite the prankster amongst your fellow soldiers. Is that true?
Yes. I like to wake up my boys by throwing water on their faces. I howled when they jumped up, afraid for their life, with their sword in hand. I also like to draw a mustache above their penis while they slept.
You know, I was a soldier and a prisoner like you, but in the Second World War. And I was imprisoned in a slaughterhouse and survived the first bombing of Dresden. My novel, Slaughterhouse 5, was based on that. But what was your most memorable battle experience?
In the Battle of Orléans, an arrow lodged in my shoulder. But I stayed strong. Who needs two functioning arms when you have God at your back, huh? And we ended the occupation of Orléans. Hurrah!
The Siege of Orleans. Yes, you have an impressive resume, Joan. What's your take on the current state of things?
In France now, the far right put my image on propaganda. I was against occupation, not against people moving freely between countries. In the US, they want to criminalize drag shows. The fabulous are the first to be thrown to the fire. Comme moi.
So, do you have any advice for people like yourself who want to challenge the patriarchy?
Start with a pep talk from God, and if any man tries to stand in your way, slice off his nipples.
Ouch.
And for the record, I would have knocked the hemorrhoids off your dry white butt on the battlefield.
I'm sure you would have. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
I don't like your kowtowing. Get a hold of yourself, Pilgrim.
Kilgores, it's youth that have the spirit, the vision, and time to mold future societies into better places. Joan, thank you for being such a fiery character and great sport. I bet you would enjoy a conversation with Napoleon.
Mon amour, we are about the same size. He is the perfect man to practice my riposte. Is this interview fini?
I'm afraid so, Joan. I must be going, but I'm sure we'll be running into each other again now. This is Kurt Vonnegut, your reporter on the afterlife. The moral here is, if you hear voices in your head telling you to kill people, you're sent to the psych ward. But if you convince leaders that the voice in your head was that of God, you're sent to lead an army to kill people. That's the separation of church and state for you folks. Until it's inconvenient, and then you're burned at the stake. And as a consolation prize, sainthood. We're gonna take a short break here, but when we come back, we'll be talking to none other than Dame Mary Quant about why growing up is hideous.
Là-haut sur les pagodes, tu m'as montré l'amour, l'espoir et la joie. Là-haut sur les pagodes, tu m'as rappelé la petite fille qui vivait en moi. Là-haut sur les pagodes, tu m'as montré l'amour, l'espoir et la joie.
And here she is, Mary Quant. Mary single-handedly changed the face of fashion. In 1955, she opened her first boutique in the heart of London's Chelsea. 60 years later, Queen Elizabeth honored her with the title Dame Mary Quant. She recently graduated to the afterlife on April 13, 2023, at the Grand Earth age of 93.
Did you see that angry teenager with a sword cursing like a punk rocker? I had to jump to get out the way. What on earth was that all about?
That was nothing much more or less than the skinniest dip into Middle Ages France. That just seems to be her way, which served her well until it didn't. The one and only Joan of Arc.
I wish I'd known. I'd love to have air-kissed with the original female pioneer.
Merde! That English escaped with his tail tucked between his squeaky butt cheeks.
Oh, she's back.
St. Joan, are you lost?
Joan of Arc, how lovely to meet you. Mwah!
Back with your kissy face, English woman.
Ah, you scared me.
Admit, the Dauphin is the rightful king, or face the sword.
Joan, stand down.
Dauphin, all the way. Colonization is not my cup of tea.
I was chasing an Englishman. He got away. Did you see him?
Oh, that's just my husband, Alexander. He's not a threat. He's a marketer. In fact, here, I have some free samples of my miniskirts. Please take one.
This is a skirt or a belt?
Ah, oh, you could certainly wear it as a belt. Groovy.
Hoorah!
Au revoir, Joan. She's quite the character, Joan of Angry Arc. Mary, St. Peter allows all souls to choose their eternal age. You chose your 20s.
Why?
I opened my first boutique at 25. Frankly, I never wanted to grow up. I was utterly self-conscious of clothes from the age of 3. I hated the uncomfortable fabrics. When I turned 13, I remember sobbing on my bed because old age had struck. I was horrified at the encumberments of maturity. The pinned hair, the long dresses, the formality. But eternity in my late 20s suits me. Old enough to dress myself properly. Young enough to look good naked.
I feel the same. Not about the long dresses, but about growing up. I'm shocked whenever I catch a glimpse of myself in the mirror now that I resemble nothing so much as an iguana. Well, Mary, I'm so grateful that you granted me the honor of a visit. I know in life you stopped giving interviews years ago.
Oh, I'm a fan of your work, Kurt. Besides, in life, I was shy. Interviews were excruciating. But here, I feel delicious, invigorated.
In the afterlife, souls receive a special kind of sustenance from the blue tunnel light. It infuses the spirit with an abundance of new ideas.
I'm becoming sort of obsessed with the blue tunnel light.
It is addictive. Sir Isaac Newton is a blue tunnel regular, obsessed with its mechanics. It's been said that the Beatles provided the soundtrack to the 60s while you provided the visuals. Where did you draw your inspiration?
When the birth control pill came on the market, women had the freedom to plan for children. For a career. That freedom was reflected in fashion.
Let's rewind to the beginning. You grew up during World War II. Your parents were teachers from coal mining families. Did they support your career?
They didn't approve of fashion design, but I found my loophole. They thought it acceptable to be an art teacher, so I attended traditional art school. I studied textile design by night, where I became obsessed with color and pattern.
Thank goodness you did. You are best known for the miniskirt, and 60 years later, people can't imagine life pre-mini.
Look, hemlines had never been brought above the knee. The Chelsea girls had the most gorgeous legs that just had to be shown off. I invented the miniskirt with the girls. They wanted the skirts shorter and shorter. Women were simply ready. The miniskirt was ready.
I hear girls were grab clothes out of your arms before you could even get them on the racks.
Before I could get them in the store. A feeding frenzy on the streets. Before Bazaar, you had to shop at different places for jewelry, dresses, accessories, makeup. Bazaar was a bouillabaisse. One-stop shopping. We had a club-like atmosphere with music and drinks and custom-made mannequins posed on motorcycles. The clothes I made weren't available before.
And you opened Bazaar with the love of your life, Alexander Plunkett Green, and worked with him until his passing at age 57. Now you're reunited, you two lovebirds. Isn't that sweet?
We were so naive. I bought fabrics from the upscale shop Harrods because I knew nothing about buying wholesale or markup.
Dame Mary, let's play a game. I'll give you prompts and you toss back whatever comes to mind. Yeah?
I'll give it a jolly good go.
Skinny ribbed sweater.
I pulled on an 8-year-old's top and I thought, I look bloody good in this.
Now, I'm partial to pulling a skinny ribbed sweater over a pot belly myself. Or maybe I just need to expand my wardrobe at the same rate as my waistline.
It's all about accentuating curves, after all.
How about pockets?
It was all about bold details on large blocks of bright color. Big pockets, big buttons, zippers, Peter Pan collars.
Tell us about your booby traps and bacon savers. What an absurdist sense of humor, not unlike my own.
Booby traps was the name for my line of bras. Bacon savers were my tights. Women's thighs were being strangled by stockings and garter belts. I had theatrical manufacturers make tights in bright colors. Delicious parrot greens, plum purple, colors that were previously balked at.
Vidal Sassoon.
A visionary. I made the clothes, Vidal created the perfect lid.
Did you know that Sassoon's bob hairstyle was supposedly inspired by Joan of Arc's boycott?
Interesting. I did not. No wonder she looked so very mod.
The Wet Look collection.
I used head-to-toe PVC to create a high-gloss line of clothing. A sci-fi futuristic look.
You made a science fiction look, and I guess I made a science fiction book or two. Of course, I never considered my work science fiction, but the critics like to pigeonhole the unpigeonholable. Well, la-dee-da. Lastly, let's go with, hot pants.
Underwear as outerwear, often paired with white or sheer tights, celebrating shape.
People enthuse about your makeup line with the Black Daisy logo, while others talk about your fake eyelashes sold by the yard where you cut off a precise amount. Innovative.
Yes. I'd changed the clothes, but now the makeup was all wrong. Twiggy and other models applied makeup like paint on a canvas, with pots of color. I started misappropriating makeup, using foundation on my lips and layers of lashes to create a baby doll look. We created the first all-in-one makeup palette, shadow, blush, and lipstick, paintbox style.
I just had this conversation with Joan, but you were also known for gender-fluid clothing.
I was a big proponent of androgynous clothing. Women deserve the same relaxed fit of men's clothing. I had Scottish knitwear suppliers add an inch onto cricket sweaters, and those became my knit dresses.
What kind of resistance did you encounter from more conservative society?
I received hate mail. Old men waving umbrellas at the window, calling us immoral. I refused to let that stop me from doing what I believed in and delivering what women wanted.
It's frustrating when progress stalls. Should I even bother asking how you feel about the current state of Europe?
It seems almost silly to me, for lack of a better word, but just downright silly, that capricious little men like Vlad are still waging their never-ending wars on the continent. It was absurd enough during Joan's Hundred Years' War.
That it was, and not just because it was more, closer to 116.
It was a ways off from a clean 100. But that's the least of it. I'd say you couldn't imagine growing up during the Blitz.
You'll never surrender.
As your city is bombed above your head. The horrors these poor children in Ukraine are currently experiencing. But you are indeed one that can more than imagine it. It's all a ways off from how civilized societies should be living.
It's unfortunate that this lesson appears lost on much of the living.
Isn't that the truth? As some of my favorite apostles, John, Paul, George, and of course Ringo, used to say, all you need is love.
You have to stand as close to the edge as you can without falling over. Well, one can never go too far when one is Mary Quant.
Thank you for taking the time to visit.
It's been a gas. I hope we can catch up at the Lion's Head Tavern, where the great minds of the afterlife gather and get groovy.
Kurt, that's a great idea. Dame Quant has me jonesing for an extra dry London gin and tonic.
Cheers to that, Kilgore. And you're buying. On that note, Mary, just mind the Joan on your way out.
Cheers.
I'm Kurt Vonnegut, your reporter on the afterlife. Godspeed, God bless, and God sees everything. Or so says Joan and her voices, especially a soul in a miniskirt. And so it goes, ladies and gentlemen.
and everyone in between. So it goes.
Kurt Vonnegut, reporter on the Afterlife, is created, directed, and executive produced by Frederick King, based on the novel God Bless You, Dr. Kevorkian by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. This episode is written by Sophie Evans and John Rosen, starring Ben Becker as Kurt Vonnegut, Lexi Ainsworth as Joan of Arc, and Emily Wadley as Mary Quant. Produced by Jim Helton, John Rosen, Grant Johnson, and Patrick Lyons. Music composed by Helen Galay, Johnny Campos, and Carlos Grasso. Sound design by Carlos Grasso. Production design by Caledonia Curry. Kurt Vonnegut, reporter on the Afterlife, is a copyright of Fountainhead Transmedia, Inc.